I am proud to say that not only are there no prerequisites for this course, but I hope to introduce you to Greek civilization. I hope to introduce you to Greek civilization through the concept of the hero from scratch, no requirements. I don't want you to worry about any of the bureaucratic aspects of the course because we address them in those handouts. I have a 5-minute read about what the course is all about, what my ideals are, how I think this is a course that teaches you what civilization is from the lens of the Greeks, of the ancient Greeks. So there's no reason for me not to start right into the material. And I thought I would show you a technical word. This isn't something that even people in my field use every day, ekpyrosis. And that means to die in a burst of flame. And it can be either an individual's death or it can be the death of the universe, ekpyrosis. And you'll see why I'm thinking of that word even as we get started. Because I'm going to show you a clip. And it's a clip from not the ancient world, but from the popular media. And this clip is by a very noted filmmaker. It doesn't matter who the filmmaker is for the moment, because I just want to show you a moment. And it's enough to say that I give it a title. And it's not the title that the filmmaker gives it, it's the title that I give it to get us started thinking about the concept of the Greek hero. And I think it's about to come. And Jensi Kiswas, Leatos Elschut, Megnidig Baselek. Yo. Isn't it nice to have an AV man who speaks my language? So, what you're going to see is something that I titled myself, and it's called The Key to Everything That's Yours. And I think that has all sorts of meaning for this course, special meaning for this course. You'll see a figure coming out through a set of doors, and he'll say, when you love someone, you've got to give them the key to everything you've got. Otherwise, what's the point? I used to think I had a love like that. And then he goes towards an object, and I would like to think that the person he loves is Helen of Troy, but it's somebody called Ginger. That's all right. But what happens is he's going to his death. And when he meets his death, suddenly there'll be this surge of music accompanying something else, which I don't want to tell you yet. There'll be this surge of music, and the music comes from Bach's St. Matthew Passion, which is one of European civilization's greatest statements about human suffering and about the agony of meeting your own death as a way of fulfilling your life. And you might think, well, this is a popular medium, and here's somebody meeting his death, and suddenly you hear in the background, Bach's St. Matthew Passion. And then wait till you read on the webpage next week what the words are, which I don't want to tell you yet, but it has to do with a mother who is lamenting the death of her son, and who is singing a song about all the agonies that the son has gone through, and how now the agonies are finally fulfilled because life has been fulfilled through this climactic moment of death. This is what the filmmaker, who happens to be Martin Scorsese, is doing with this scene that should be banal. After all, it's Las Vegas. Jensi Kiswas? Yo. Okay, so here we go.
When you love someone, you've got to trust them. There's no other way. You've got to give them the key to everything that's yours. Otherwise, what's the point? For a while, I believed that's the kind of love I had.
Yeah.
it's Joe Pesci, it's Sharon Stone. These are not exactly the great figures of Greek civilization. But I think I'm making the point with the music and how somebody, even if he's from Las Vegas, even if he is a character in a Martin Scorsese movie, can get into something very great, get into the music of the St. Matthew Passion through an experience of death. So even the most banal and even the most everyday can make contact with this world that is bigger than our world. And in fact, that's what I have to concentrate on immediately. The concept of the hero is how you can get into great art, how you can get into a kind of medium that will preserve your memory forever to people from all walks of life, from all sorts of different cultural backgrounds. And the one unifying thing is that larger-than-life experience, which is the heroic experience. And that brings me to the key word of the lecture. Every lecture will have a key word which comes from the original Greek. And the word is kleros, and it's number one on your handout for the lecture today. And this word, kleros, was used by the ancient Greeks to refer not just to the glory that comes to the hero, but also the medium that gives that hero the glory. And you might have heard the expression, it doesn't matter who said it first, the medium is the message. What you see here in the word kleros is a concept that not only conveys the glory of the hero, but also the medium that gives the hero that glory. And the hero will do anything, including die, in order to get into this kleros. And with that in mind, let's immediately look at number two of the handout, which is perhaps one of the greatest moments of the Iliad, the work of Greek literature that we'll read for the first assignments. In this passage, the greatest hero of the Iliad, Achilles, is talking about his own destiny, his own heroic destiny. And he says, "My mother Thetis tells me that there are two ways in which I may meet my end, my telos, which is not just a linear end, it's a coming full circle. If I stay here and fight, I shall lose my safe homecoming, nostos, but I will have a glory, kleros, that is unwilting." If I can just say that part in Greek, olatomenmoi nostos athar kleos astikon estai. And then to continue quoting Achilles in translation, "Whereas if I go home, my glory, my kleros, will die, but it will be a long time before the outcome of death shall take me." So what are the choices? Either a long life, a rich, fruitful life, and no kleros, or a short life, a very intense life, with a perfect death, an emphasized perfect death. And if you do that, then you get into a kleros. And what kind of kleros is it? It's an unwilting kleros. And in the Greek poetic imagination, that unwilting kleros is like a beautiful flower. But this flower, unlike natural flowers, does not wilt. It does not shrivel. It keeps its beautiful color. It keeps its aroma. It keeps its overall intensity and joy of life. And this is one of the strongest statements that the Greek hero himself is quoted as saying about the medium that is conveyed all the way to our times. It's a kind of self-awareness of the hero about how his or her identity depends on the medium that conveys that identity, and that medium is kleros. It's both the means and the end to the concept of the hero. Now, when Achilles is saying this thing that he says in item two of the handout, he already knows that he's going to die. And he's not even sure why he is at Troy fighting for the Greeks, who are called Achaeans, they're called Argives, they're called Danaans. They all mean Greeks of the heroic age. He's not sure, really, why he's there anymore, except that he does know that how he behaves what kind of choices he makes will determine whether he gets into the medium or not. Now this image of a medium that will not wilt the way a natural flower will wilt brings me to number 3 of the handout, which is an interesting cultural distinction that the ancient Greeks, just as we have, about art on the one hand and nature on the other hand. May I put it another way? Artificial on one hand, natural on the other hand. Let me do it one other way. Cultural on one hand, natural on the other hand. Anthropologists love to talk about culture versus nature. But you know what our problem is? Their culture is not our culture. There are all sorts of differences, and that's why we're here, to study those differences, because otherwise we don't understand what drives them. And one of the things about their culture that we might find it hard to understand is that, as anthropologists would say it, their song culture. A lot of things that you and I would express not by way of song, they will express by way of song. And the most important one of these, I just signaled this in advance, is what the Irish call keening, K-E-E-N-I-N-G. And a more neutral term is lamentation. In this culture, this kind of activity is done mostly by women. And the idea is that when something really sorrowful happens, especially death, women of the society will sing songs of lamentation. And here's the thing, you're crying and singing at the same time. While you're singing, your tears are running, your nose may be running, your voice is choked, and yet you're singing as well as crying, and crying as well as singing. It's part of the song culture. And therefore, when we talk about artificial versus natural, what are we going to do? Since for us, singing is artificial, so if somebody is singing, they can't be crying. If somebody is crying, how can they be singing? And I would say, because of this problem of reality, and is it realistic, we should try to think, even if it's very different, things about things in our culture, even if it's very popular culture, where the idea of emotions, the idea of perpetuating everything that you are can be expressed through song, and where even identity can be expressed through song. Now, I'm thinking of, this is maybe a very vulgar example, but Yancy, get ready for Eddie. I just happen to like it. You like KTEL commercials on television where you get this offer to get somebody's greatest hits. And one of my favorite comedians once did a send-up of this convention. And I want to show you this. But I'm afraid you're the wrong generation. See, I grew up with one channel on my television, and you see the same channel over and over again. And I think for years and years I'd watch The Little Rascals. And most of you don't know who the Little Rascals are, but my favorite character was somebody called Alfalfa. And sometimes he was called Buckwheat. And there's this one comedian who's my favorite comedian today, Eddie Murphy, who did a sketch on Buckwheat. But what fascinates me about this, and I hope you like this, is that, and it's really true for me, once Eddie Murphy sang Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places, I could never think of the song the same way. And this will be extremely important when we think about the self-awareness of the hero and how everybody makes a difference to the song. The way the commercial says it is, once Buckley takes the song, he makes it forever his own. And I like that, forever his own. And sure enough, every time I hear Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places, I can only hear Eddie Murphy singing Looking for Nub in All the Wrong Places. So, Yancy, if you're ready, this is another take on eternity, okay? Watch the words and watch the subtitles.
It's been a long time since them days. Hi, I'm Buckwheat. Remember me? And I have some fire for you and your listening pleasure, some of my favorite songs. It's all here on this unspectacular offer. Buckwheat. Take a whistle. Times, times I made it.
Yes, they're all here.
Putting up in all the wrong places. Working for now.
Once Buckwheat sings a song, it's eternally his.
It died. Daddy Diver, stand on the daddy side. Made it, David.
Yes, Buckwheat, the man who sold four records and helped us all the people.
Una panuna banda.
And if you order now, you'll get Buckwheat's tribute to Alfalfa.
And the Baba of the meal, Figaro, Figaro.
Order today, send $49.95 for the full volume to Buckwheat by Bernie Free, New North, New North.
For my dang, your dang is nothing. Buy my wagon, all tight.
So the key words are, he takes the song and he makes it forever his own, and he really does. And this strong drive to get into the song, and by getting into the song, whether you're a performer or the subject, or as in the case of Achilles, both, because he's not only the subject of the song, as we'll see, he performs his own epic and his own song about how he dies. That kind of drive, I think, is present even in the very different but present aspects of our song culture. Yancy, you're going to do the next one very soon. I thought I would also show you a situation where the competitiveness of this drive, where different people want to get into the medium in different ways, can also be reflected in the way in modern popular music people associate various songs with their personal lives, so that if you heard a song, a popular song, even if it's not of great artistic merit, at a very crucial point of your own lifetime, then every time you hear that song again, it evokes one kind of an emotion or another. And therefore, and this is again what I'm driving at with the power of the Greek medium, is it's very important when you hear something, in what context you hear it, whether it comes directly from you or whether it comes from tradition. And we'll see that there's a great deal of interest in Greek civilization about whether somebody who experienced something before in song can make you experience the same thing when you hear the same song. And so the next example, and this will be the last non-serious clip I'll show you for quite a while, is featuring a character from Party of Five, which is something that some of you watch, I think. And this is Scott Wolf, he plays Bailey, and he was once a guest on Saturday Night Live. And this is a situation where you have two singers in a college situation trying to compete with each other to get into the emotional life of their audience. So.
I gotta go study for my anthro midterm. There's no way you're reading all that before tomorrow.
You know what? It doesn't matter. My PA hates me anyway.
I'm just a poor boy, though my story seldom told. I swore to my sister, with power of numbers, such a fair.
I love time in the dark with you. How long have you been playing?
La la la! La la la! La la la! La la la!
Desperado! You've been out riding fences for so long now.
Can you teach me that one?
Captain Treadle and the Silver Spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon. Any job at home that I don't know when. We'll get together then. And we'll have a good time. Yeah.
I'm not bothered.
Even though we ain't got money, I'm so in love with you, honey, and every day, oh, yeah.
Hey, we don't even know the words to that.
Hey, can you play Cat Stevens?
I can.
Ooh, baby, it's my world. American pie. I drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
Hey, you. What's your name?
Me?
Yeah.
Amy.
Amy, what you gonna do? I think I'm in love with you.
What's your name?
Diane.
Gloria, the Elevara and
Gloria. I
shut up.
Walked out of her dorm room into the driving rain. Screamed out to the bell tower, but she couldn't feel my pain.
We don't know that one. Yeah, how are we supposed to sing along?
It's an original. I wrote it.
We hate that.
Hey, come on.
Come on. Yesterday morning, 11 miles where you were gone. Oh. And then the plans they made put an end to you. Walked out the storm, and I wrote down the song. I can't remember who to send it to. I've been by and I've been rain.
Hey, you guys want to go back to my dorm room and have sex?
Yeah, I'm over it.
This is a good illustration of natural and artificial, right? And I want you to keep in mind, I've seen fire and I've seen rain for various reasons that are coming up as I bring us to the climax of what I want to say, which is what exactly the Greek word is for natural and nature. And you will see it, essentially, in coming to a micro-narrative, that is to say, a very compressed version of the kind of story that the Achilles story is in macro form, and that's in number 6, where instead of having an epic that is 15,000 plus lines long, which is what you will be reading when you read the Iliad, you have an epic that is one line long, which is ultimately compressed. And this is somebody who got married, who went to fight at Troy, who died on the Trojan side, And why did he do it? He left behind a bride. He was on his honeymoon. He interrupted the honeymoon. He comes. He gets killed. And then in one line, you have a description of why he did it. He did it in order to get into the kleros of the Achaeans. That is to say, he did it to get into the medium of Greek civilization that we're reading in the Iliad. If I can put it in textual terms, he died to get into the Iliad. The kleros of the Achaeans, the kleros of the Greeks, is what we're about to read. And that seems very natural. It's the way flowers bloom and then wilt. But there's a word for it, this phenomenon, and you see it in number 8, hora, which is defined as season, seasonality, time, timeliness. If I may say, being on time. And the goddess, number 9, who presides over seasonality, being on time, is Hera. And related to that goddess's name, number 10, is the key word in the title of our course, the concept of the hero. Yes, the word heros, linguistically speaking, is related to Hera, is related to Hora. So a hero, from the Greek point of view, from the ancient Greek point of view, is somebody who is connected with the idea of seasonality. And the case in point that I want to bring to your attention is Heracles, alias Hercules in Roman traditions. Heracles is somebody who is mentioned in the Iliad, number 12, in what again is a very compressed versus expanded narrative. This medium can say things in a very compressed way, it can say things in a very expanded way. And what better way to get introduced to the main hero of the Iliad, who will take 15,000 lines to tell his story, is this predecessor, this model for Achilles, Heracles, whose story is told in a very short, compressed way. And if you sneak a peek ahead of time and read this particular passage, you see in outlined form all the main issues that we'll be concerned with when we consider the big picture of Achilles. And look at what the name Heracles means, Herakles, he who has the kleros of Hera. That is to say, he who is connected to this idea of seasonality, of everything having its right time and right place, as presided over by this goddess called Hera. And I essentially can tell you the story of Heracles, if you'll allow me, in my own words, distilled from ancient sources and heavily compressed, since I have only so much time. But just as a background for what you will be reading when the Iliad refers to the story of Heracles, here is my retelling, and I can do it very quickly. So, Heracles is born of Zeus as a father, Zeus, that's the executive of the universe, the most powerful of all gods. That's on the father's side. And then on the mother's side are the mortal woman. He is destined to become the king of his generation and the greatest king of his generation. But Hera, who is the wife of Zeus and who is a goddess, is angry that Zeus had sex with a mortal human, a mortal female. And so she slows down the birth timetable of Heracles and speeds up the birth timetable of Heracles' inferior cousin, who, because he's born first, becomes the king, thereby depriving Heracles of his destiny as a king. Which means that Heracles has to spend all of his life taking orders from somebody who is inferior to him as a hero, but who is superior to him in the social scale. And this is how we get the 12 labors. We will talk about the 12 labors of Heracles, fighting monsters, fighting overpowering enemies. One labor after another, he struggles through it. And he owes it all, so to speak, to the fact that he was made unseasonal by the goddess of seasonality, the goddess Hera. And there's an irony here which we will contemplate in many other ways as we go through this course. but it says something basic about the concept of the hero. In the end, Heracles becomes poisoned by the semen of a centaur. You don't want to hear how this happened. What's important is that his nervous system undergoes the greatest shock that any human has ever experienced, and his pain is more excruciating than anyone else's agony ever. This is the way the poetic tradition describes it. And he goes to a mountaintop and prays to his father to relieve him of his agony because he can't stand the pain anymore. And he is even sitting on his own funeral pyre so that his friends can light the funeral pyre, he can go up in a burst of flame and thereby be relieved of his suffering. At that point, the thunderbolt of Zeus vaporizes him. Ekpyrosis. He goes up in a ball of flame, and next thing you know, he's not there anymore. His friends are looking for him, and he's gone. He's gone from the mountaintop. Next moment, he opens his eyes, and he's on Mount Olympus in the company of the gods. And at that point, the goddess Hera takes her between her legs and simulates giving him childbirth. And at that point, he is reintegrated with the gods. He becomes immortalized. I make the distinction between immortal and immortalized because we humans, all of us, have to die, even if we hope for a heroic immortalization after death. But gods never have to go through the experience of death. So, if you look at the figure of Heracles as a model of the hero, as a compressed way of coming to terms with the more expanded story that we will read about Heracles, about Achilles, we see in number 13 a set of characteristics for the hero. That he is A, unseasonal, B, extreme, mostly positively, but to some extent negatively, and C, antagonistic towards the god who is most like the hero. In this case, Hera herself, the goddess of seasonality, is antagonistic to Heracles. Therefore, Heracles has to spend his whole life in a state of disequilibrium. And he remains in disequilibrium, in unseasonality, till the very end of his life, marked by death, at which point he can finally achieve seasonality, he can finally achieve equilibrium. And you can see how, in a sense, the whole story, when it's told, finally integrates and balances the hero who has been off balance all his life. And death is the defining moment. But death is the defining moment because that's when you see the story come full circle. And that's when the right time and the right place can finally happen to the hero. And that is why, even though Hera is the persecutor of Heracles, Hera is the means for Heracles to achieve his equilibrium. To put it another way, the hero in his or her lifetime is always off balance. And true balance, equilibrium, seasonality can only be achieved once the story is fully told. And that story is Kleos. And that is why Heracles means he who has the Kleos of Hera. And that is why Heros, a hero, is a creature of seasonality, even though through his or her mortal lifetime, that seasonality can never be achieved until the very end. I want to show you, I think, a very beautiful modern representation. This is again from popular media, but this is dead serious. And it's from a favorite science fiction film of mine called Blade Runner, which I will be screening in its entirety for you, free at the Science Center on Tuesday at 8 o'clock, Science Center C. And I want to show you today a clip from Blade Runner where a replicant, that is to say, may I put it this way, an artificial human, is lamenting over the fact that he, unlike normal humans, has a compressed lifetime. That whereas other people have a natural lifetime, he has a very, very compressed lifetime, and he keeps obsessing over time. And the way this character, whose name is Roy Batty, says time, I think is very, very close to the ancient Greek concept of hora, seasonality, or heros, the creature of seasonality, or the hero, and even a figure like Heracles, whose name means he who achieves fame in the medium by way of the pathway of seasonality. So Yancy, here's my hat.
Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave. I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in the rain. Time to die.
A lot of Greek things in this, a lot of ancient Greek things. Not that it was intended that way, but when you hear me discuss this on Tuesday night after the film, you'll see what I mean. I have a lengthy analysis. But where I'd like to end today is, if you just look at the author, the modern author, number 17 on the handout, J.D. Salinger, whose character is talking about the immature man. And I'm fascinated with the word mature and immature because in many ways this modern term comes close to the ancient Greek concept of whether one is timely, one is seasonal or not. And you see here Holden Caulfield being instructed by the teacher, and the teacher is quoted as saying, "The mark of the immature man is that he wants to die nobly for a cause, while the mark of a mature man is that he wants to live humbly for one." Well, you know what? My guess is that Achilles would answer to Holden Caulfield's teacher, "If that's the way it is, then I'd rather be immature rather than mature during my life." I love the way this replicant says, "All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in the rain, time to die." The teacher continues, speaking in Salinger's narrative, many, many men have been just as troubled morally and spiritually as you are right now. Happily, some of them kept records of their troubles. We call it records. They call it cells. You'll learn from them if you want to. It's a beautiful reciprocal arrangement, and it isn't education, it's history, it's poetry. Thank you very much.
Thank you.